we've got one from My Waste of Talent, and that is Honey, the Physics Are Broken.
Rick Moranis has come back out of retirement.
To make the world less. Into one giant M.C. Escher painting.
No, the world, like, that's it, isn't it? Like, Rick Moranis is done growing and shrinking people. He's moved on to his next. That was his thesis. Like, now he's moved on to the applied sciences. He's really going to try and change the world. He's, like, trying to grow fruit to be bigger. You know the things he said that he was going to do with Honey, I Blew Up the Kid?
I mean, he still can do those things. It's just like, yeah, like, just don't put your kid in the machine.
Yeah, but he's made it industrial size because, as we all know, Rick Moranis, incredibly, like, he doesn't care about safety in his inventions at all. So he's like, right, industrial size food grower and shrinker for transporting and stuff. And he's like, well, the thing is, we had to mess around with the molecules, so then this basically
messing around with atoms now.
Yeah, now we can grow these
and
things
space
bigger.
Time.
But people aren't happy with just giant apples, right? We need to.
It's just giant apples.
Yeah. We need to turn them into something else when they get there, because the world isn't always happy with the market. Just won't bear just giant apples, and it's, you need something else. So he's like, right, I need something that's going to turn things around. So there's a thing where you can put in, you can show it a picture of something, and it'll turn the giant apple into it, right? So he's like, all right, here's a rutabaga.
Where is this going?
Here's a picture of a rutabaga, feed it into the machine, and it fires it at the apple, and it turns into a rutabaga, right?
What's a rutabaga?
It's an American vegetable. It's an American word for a vegetable.
Why did you choose that?
I don't know. It's got a funny name.
See, I know it from a song, like, but I don't... What is it?
From Adam.
It's an apple there, that's fine.
Yeah, so you can choose... He shows it a picture of a banana, and the apple turns into a banana, right?
I love how he's just putting apples in the machine.
And then his children, who now hate him for traumatising them, try to ruin his experiment that he's going to get paid loads of money from by putting an M.C. Escher painting into this machine.
And then just taking the apple away, so it's like, oh shit, I better turn the world into an M.C. Escher painting.
It just spreads... Escher world is spreading throughout the world.
Doctor Strange like virus.
Yeah, how is this horror and not just the last 10 minutes of Labyrinth?
Because it's terrifying, Jenny. Science is scary.
I mean, like, MC, he also did that tessellation stuff, so you've got, like, those, is it lizards or birds and stuff that he made, and there's loads of, this is MC Escher, all tessellated together, black on white, black on white. Look it up, kids. all those are just coming flight. They're like swarms of those in shoals, like fish, coming down and devouring people on the streets and then flying off into the sky.
That's the horror bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, M.C. Escher's paintings are a little bit daunting when you're in them.
The tessellated birds. Question time. It's question time.
What questions have you got for us, Tom?
Questions. How are you sure that Jennifer Garner isn't Jennifer Garner? What if she is secretly Elektra? And what if she is secretly going on 30? That's from Cyber Connor.
Well.
What, Jenny, are you secretly going on 30?
I mean, not right. I mean, I will be.
You will be eventually.
Not right now.
Out of all of us in this room, you are the person least going on 30.
That is true. I'm the least going on 30 of us all.
Yeah, the going on 30 listlessness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's a sentence that makes sense.
Yep. I'm trying really hard. From The Headless Maxim.
Ooh,
a new contender.
No, I think that's the weirder Maxim that just put a Halloween spooky name on the top.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I mean, sorry.
a spooky headless Maxim. I am afraid of your costume.
Twitter costume.
If ghosts attempt to table flip a table, will the table flip?
Katie, I think this is your question. You would know.
If ghosts attempt to table flip a table, will the table flip?
Yeah.
No. it's no, isn't it? Because like, they walk through stuff.
I love how quite a lot of these are yes or no.
I don't know how else to elaborate.
If it's a poltergeist, yes.
Yes, that's true.
Because they can choose what they interact with.
If a ghost spooks Haley Joel Osment into flipping a table, then it's
Joel Osment.
he was in the
Osmonds.
Yeah, the Donnie and Marie show, right? The Donnie Marie and Haley show.
Joel Osment.
Yeah, it's the Donnie Marie and Haley Joel show.
No,
back in the 70s.
No,
now?
No.
Then he went. Right. He went from that onto the Sixth Sense, and then.
Imagining.
And now, whatever the fuck he does now.
Acting still, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know what he'd been in.
No.
I don't know what acting he'd been in.
I don't think anyone does.
One film that's on Netflix always comes up as a recommended, and I'm not watching it. I think it's just called Sex Education.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I've seen that.
It really wants me to watch it. Yeah. And I'm like, no, thanks.
I want to see a film where the main character has a face that's tiny in proportion to his head. That's what I want to see.
I think they made a feature Thomas the Tank Engine.
They did. Mara Wilson in. It was her last film.
Who also has a face tiny in proportion to her head. So you know,
it's just a child actor thing. Yes.
I did think, watching The Sixth Sense recently, that he looked a lot like Mara Wilson.
Yeah.
There's something about his little face. So I thought, maybe that's just because they're both children acting, but very, like, similar.
I'm trying to think of child actors who don't have that trend of having their face tiny in proportion to
because
their...
Macaulay Culkin does, doesn't he?
Yeah. it's the curse of Hollywood.
Do you think that, like, child actors are good child actors because they look like they have naturally sized faces, which never grow. Their heads grow, but their faces never do.
It's I guess when they were child actors, the continuity was a nightmare because they kept growing over the time. So I think they've been injected with a serum that makes their head
coarse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's just...
In between shoots, they just put them in a big face clamp to keep them squished up.
They're so messed up.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's what Lindsay Lohan keeps. Actually, Lindsay Lohan, I don't think is
quite a normal sized.
Yeah. Then again, she made that transition of sort of like. I mean, Mara Wilson hasn't been in anything since.
Are you suggesting that the being unable to transition out of being a
child actor
is a is a symptom of having a small face?
Yeah,
your face small.
like if you're not in the public eye for so long,
your face doesn't
grow until the people see it again.
Or do we think maybe it's more like as it was for Rupert Grint, who's also a child actor whose face never grew.
Daniel Radcliffe, I don't think
his face grew.
Daniel Radcliffe.
His face
well
wraps most of the way around his head.
Yeah.
So
he's got a very he fills the space perfectly.
A girthy face.
He's got a girthy face.
I just love how he looked at me really sincerely, just like, his face grew.
It's true, it did.
Yeah.
He didn't get as much of the as much of that hormone as Willem Dafoe, whose face never stopped growing. But
will never stop growing.
Yeah, it's just when instead of the heat death of the universe, it's going to be Willem Dafoe's smile just the entire place.
Do you know, I'm sorry, I realised something yesterday while watching RuPaul's Drag Race. I thought John Waters and Steve Buscemi were the same person. They're not.
Who's John Waters?
I don't know who John Waters is.
Okay. He directed Hairspray in a load of really fucking weird shit with drag queens in, like in a giant lobster. He worked with Divine.
Are we to assume that he did Hairspray,
and he looks
like Steve Buscemi?
He looks like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
And he's been in something, and I thought it was Steve Buscemi.
Oh my god, he's.
What?
That
you
black
thought
and white
he?
Is terrifying.
You saw
oh, God,
that,
it
that
is.
Photo in black and white.
You thought
they were the right.
Further along.
You thought God. Evil Bruce Forsyth was Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. He'd been in a film I'd watched recently, and I was like, what's Steve Buscemi?
I
realised there are two people that look the same.
I can't tell if he's got a moustache or if his upper lip is diseased.
Yeah. it took me a while, and I, can't really tell if that's a moustache or not. So yeah, that question was if a ghost attempts to table flip. Or the table flip.
We did all right.
I've written just skeleton, but it's another word. From Frank Margarella, we've got Skeletown.
Skeletown.
Oh, yeah. That just makes me think of Funny Bones.
Yeah.
Oh.
In the dark, dark
streets.
Oh, dark, dark town. In the dark.
Skeletons live!
Okay.
Yeah, anyone got any ideas for...
I think it is the live action remake of Funny Bones.
Who would you cast as the two guys from Funny Bones?
Two from Frasier. Niles and what's his name, the other one?
Frasier. Wow.
That's where I'm at today,
guys. Those two guys from Frasier. Niles and the other one.
I was trying to think of Kelsey Grammer, not Frasier.
David Hyde Pierce and Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah, those two.
Skeletown.
Good combo.
Yeah. That would be a good combo, actually.
It's just Frasier.
That's why it's already been done.
Do you think... Yeah, that is why they put that in Frasier.
It's tried and tested.
But what I mean is, like...
Great combo.
What is Frasier after death?
Look, we've got to tie that in, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, because then there's a little dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
We've got to sort of, like... So, Skeletown, right?
Tim Burton. If Danny Elfman does the music.
Yeah, that. If Funny Bones had got a more international audience and everyone had seen it, and not just people who were grew up in the 90s...
In the UK.
Then it would be... We would find out at the end that it was Niles and Frasier all along and they died. But the world's adoration of their characters had not allowed them to die.
Well, it's like sort of... The Land of the Dead from Corpse Bride.
Yeah.
Like Grim Fandango, that kind of thing. If you've ever seen Grim Fandango.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how about this town?
Mexican Day of the Dead, basically.
There's a whole, like, apocalypse thing, right? Mm. We don't even touch on it, really. Everyone dies. But... The most beloved people in the world, somehow, people's adoration of them kept them from being able to die. So they all these wandering corpses just come back to this town and start civilization anew. That's how you get Skeletown.
Oh, yeah. They've been stripped of their flesh from the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
But still alive as skeletons.
And so this is the actors, David Hyde Pierce and Kelsey Grammer, who are like, we used to do Frasier. Oh my god, it's great to see you again. Do you want to live together? And then we don't even find out it's the Funny Bones prequel.
Until the very end
when we hear in a dark, dark night on the dark, dark town.
You're like, oh shit, that was the twist. It's the Funny Bones prequel.
So it's... and everyone in it, like, plays themselves. It's like this is the end, except not with Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen.
With actual actors.
Get him out.
But it still ends with the Backstreet Boys.
That's how every film should end.
Post-nuclear Backstreet Boys.
I mean, if people come back based on how beloved they are, Backstreet Boys are in, aren't they?
They are.
Backstreet, back. We're dead!
From death, surely.
From death, yeah. From Tomasz Czerkowski, we've got The Man That Could Not Stop Breathing.
So, the man that doesn't die...
Well,
right. I mean,
there's that scene in the film in horror movies where they're hiding in a closet or something, or they're hiding under something, and they're like, and then they're with that guy. He's just like got this like neck beard, and he's sort of like he's. He's got like sleep apnea, and he's sort of like.
There is a mechanic on Alien Isolation where if you're in a locker and the alien's looking around for you and it's right next to you, you've got to hold your breath. Like if it's looking in the locker for you, there's a button that holds your breath.
Oh shit!
And if you'd let go of it, like it comes out, like kills you, basically.
Man.
But yeah, no, there is that weird trope of being locked in somewhere and then. Going... Yeah, just sort of holding your breath so that no one's...
You've got Jurassic Park fucking did it.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, like you mentioned in games, Till Dawn has a mechanic with the PlayStation 4 remote where you can't... It's got the gyroscope thing. You can't move the controller. If you move the controller, then your character moves and they get caught by the whatever.
So is that one guy that always ruins it for the rest of them, gets more killed because he can't
hold his breath. And it just keeps happening.
Turns up at every murder scene.
It starts off in like it's like a big house, like a bunch of friends and like a getaway, like loads of people, and they're playing sardines. And he keeps getting found by people and ruining it for everyone. And they're all like, oh, fucking Michael, stop it.
No, I've got it.
You're ruining the game.
I've got it. Basically, it's a selection of short scenes. Selection of short scenes, all from horror films, where the victim's hiding in the closet and they go like that as the chain axe murderer or like the just a murderer or someone is like walking around a room and like it's all very tense. And then out of the clothes... In every one of these closets comes this bearded man who just goes
scarier than the horror films they're from.
Yeah. To bat them away, just like, what are you doing? They fall out of the closet and the man sinks back into the clothes.
Oh my god.
So who's really the murderer? Yeah.
Well, I think
situation.
Good. I like that.
I think we end up finding like someone is it, we have a POV character, which is an investigator who's investigating all these, because we've already taken the assumption that all these murders are happening in a in real life. So someone's investigating all these murders and it turns out all these people died in closets or under beds.
Yeah, I was going to say under beds, like someone comes out, this guy comes out of a box under a bed, like, and he's got like, he doesn't even look at the person, he's just looking dead ahead into the camera as he breathes.
And it turns out, and it's not the same serial killer, like completely different MOs, right? But this investigator, played by Sandra Bullock, like I'm just thinking of Murder by Numbers right now, is like going on the trail of these serial killers, and nothing's the same until she finds this guy who seems to be on the same trail as her. He's investigating the same serial killers as her. He's not from the police. He's like just an enthusiast, right? And she realises that he is following them round, and because he was like bullied at school from his deep breathing by people, he's like feeding these victims to the serial killers while he like, and he appears, he waits for them and just breathes really heavily in the house. He gets them killed. It's a revenge thing.
I genuinely want that to be a film.
But
the more that I think about horror films, the more I think maybe I do quite like them. I like Stephen King books. Maybe I do like horror.
Do you like Stephen King movies? Because nobody else does.
No. You don't.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they keep getting made.
It's because everyone's like, maybe I'll make the good one. Maybe I'll be the one that's a good adaptation of it, and everyone will go, oh.
Every filmmaker ever is like, maybe I'll make the good Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah, like that's the dream. That's the hope that you're going to be the one that everyone goes to and goes, you didn't make it shit.
Shawshank Redemption, terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
See, that is a good film.
Yeah.
Although I haven't read the book.
No.
But see, I thought The Shining was good until I read the book.
It's a short story.
It is,
yeah,
really
I was
going
to say, I know that the film is, like, would takes a lot longer than reading the book, yeah. Which is the wrong way around.
It's like, you want to get a quick good afternoon, read The Shawshank Redemption. Don't watch it, because it will take longer than an afternoon.
It's like Woman in Black as well, isn't it? That's quite good. It's got Daniel Radcliffe in. Lovely boy. I thought it was quite scary. No, it's not, but it's a very, very short book that's based on a guy spending like an hour in a house. But it's drawn out for this like huge hour and a half thing of where he's got to like dig up a child and do all this other shit.
I think horror for me, when you actually sort of see the horror things that happen. And like, oh, it's a monster.
Aerial Monsters.
Look at this horror thing that's happening right now. Like Saw, I'm just sort of like, this isn't very good.
Well, it's not horror, is it?
Yeah, everything gore. No,
Saw isn't a horror.
They call it
torture porn, don't they? That sort of, you don't feel scared, you feel repulsed and like, I don't want to watch this anymore. And it's almost, you know how there are two kinds of spicy? There's spicy, there's like, trust me on this, go with me. There's the spicy that's like nice, tasty, ooh, that's a nice sort of range of flavours that mesh in with the, and then there's just like this empty, I'm about to die, why did I eat that except to impress my friends? Spicy. Saw's like that. It's like Saw is the empty sort of, I'm only still keeping my eyeballs on this film because I want to impress someone and say that I've seen it. Whereas then there's horror which has like tension, pacing, and then ups and downs, and all the good stuff.
It's the drinks you drink because you like the taste, and then the shots you do with your friends.
Yeah, and then there's Sambuca, yes.
Yeah. There's shots you like drinking and there's Sambuca. But yeah, I think horror films for me, I mean, we were talking about the Black Mirror episodes earlier in the haunted house.
Oh, God.
Yeah, where that genuinely makes you think, like, when it's over. And I like those kind of horror movies. It did not make me think. it was just so... I mean, it made me think, but about the wrong things. It didn't make me think about, like, ooh, what if that happened to me? No, it made me think, like, why clowns? Why was there a load of people just floating at the end of it? Spoiler alert, I guess, but...
Again, it made so much more sense in the context of the book, when the book was written, because clowns weren't as terrifying yet, because it hadn't been written.
I guess.
It's like trying to watch Taxi Driver after having seen the scene in Simpsons where Mo is at the mirror going, "You talking to me? You anybody else here? You talking to me?" And then I'm like,
"I'm getting some ridiculous insight into your film knowledge right now."
It's all the Simpsons.
Yeah.
I credit everything I know to the Simpsons.
Yeah. Seriously, I watched Taxi Driver after I saw that scene, and it flavoured the film.
I get it now.
Oh, yeah, this bit was done on The Simpsons. from Ed Crawley, we've got Grave Swappers.
Oh, I love that.
Oh.
I don't have any ideas, but I love it.
God.
I'm thinking this is a Channel 4 reality TV show.
It goes wrong, it's like Dead Set.
Like
Dead Set, where Big Brother, it's Big Brother, but zombies, there's a zombie apocalypse while everyone's inside the Big Brother house.
Charlie Brooker thing.
Yeah.
Grave Swappers. Like Wife Swap.
I think...
Wives
but with
swap?
Corpses.
Yeah.
Ew. Why would you?
It's set, like, at, you know, at the end of Shaun of the Dead, and he's got him in his shed, and they go and play video games together.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that. And it's after
swap,
that.
Swap your zombies. What if friends?
This is set in heaven.
This is one of the TV shows at the end of Shaun of the Dead, when it's like all the zombies like running and doing races and stuff. I know that film weirdly well, apparently.
What if, and hear me out, it's a one of our wild hell rides. As in, one of these people, like, when Judgment Day comes, right, and everyone's raised up from the grave, right, two people have slightly different names, like in Brazil, and they get accidentally swapped over in their graves. They get buried, and they die on the same day. One's lived a really great life, one's lived a really horrible life, and the guy who's really nice ends up in hell.
Okay. So who's really nice?
So I think we've got my heart went to Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So Anna Kendrick.
She's really nice. She's
You're gonna pick
nice.
Someone who can do no wrong.
Yeah.
Mm. In Hollywood's eyes.
Yeah.
And then who
But in Katie's eyes.
Just jealous.
Who is the evil that has
Who's
taken
a naughty
taken
it's actually Satan.
What? That's
I
don't
know,
the actor.
Satan's got to be a.
Oh right, I thought you meant who is
oh,
the
no.
who
who's
is the bad
the,
guy in this
the,
movie?
Who's the
I mean, who's the actor?
Yeah,
lived a bad life.
Yeah,
who's the guy she got swapped with? That's what I was thinking. Like, well, who, oh, it's Satan.
I think it's
Liz Hurley.
I was gonna say the lady from SNL. What's her name? Who's in Ghostbusters?
Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon.
Yeah,
good call.
I like that. Kate McKinnon and. Did you say
Anna Kendrick?
Anna Kendrick.
And it's almost like a weird. How do they? They'd have to meet somehow because they'd have to have this buddy thing.
There's like transport to the sort of dividing areas.
Oh, I tell you
there's
what.
Like, there's like a ghost bus, and like all the apocalypse, they were taking to this like sort of ghost terminal. It's like this side for heaven, this side for hell. Here's, they keep calling people's names.
Here's an easy one, right? Heaven has way more stringent checks than hell does, doesn't it? So when they get swapped around and like I don't know,
hell,
Sam,
hell very inclusive. It's really nice. Really nice. Come on, be in our gang.
One's
Lovely
called like
one down there.
Yeah,
Jennifer Cooley, and the other's called Jerifer Cooley. And the bad one gets sorry the good one gets sent to hell. Mm. That all goes off without a hitch, but the whole thing is a hitch. But you know what I mean. Mm. But the bad one getting sent to heaven, she gets up there, and obviously there's just pearly gates, and they're like, no, you go back down to hell. Just go, and then they just knock her back down again.
Yeah, they don't bother trying to find who. Whose place she took.
Yeah, it's not trading places, it's a horror film.
So, Kate McKinnon and Anna Kendrick have got to get back. Well.
In time.
In time? No, Anna Kendrick's got to get back to heaven.
Yeah.
With the help of Kate McKinnon. Because Kate McKinnon wants redemption because she's seen what heaven is and she's like, yep, kind of wish I'd lived a good life now.
Okay. But she's also there's also a sort of like side thing where the person who she considered the love of her life that she like dicked over in life she is up there as well. She saw them on the other side of the pearly gates but couldn't get to them. She was like, oh, I really want to. So really she's trying to get in there like that. That's what's driving her at the start, but later on she starts to go for redemption.
Ryan Gosling has been let into heaven.
Yeah.
But Kate McKinnon hasn't.
Because she murdered him.
But from the back, so he didn't see.
Yeah.
See, he's still in love with her.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That's the tragedy they're in this movie. And so I'm thinking, like...
What part of this is horror?
Well, getting onto this now.
Yeah.
It's
hell.
Like a fantasy horror, this, isn't it?
Hell, just going through hell would be...
Yeah.
I mean, it just, like, it could just be normal I'm thinking it's kind of like Mother, as in, like, it looks real. Everything looks real. It's just insane what happens in, like, this house or whatever.
I think it's got to be that they have to do all these trials to get out of hell, and it's all, like, oh, it's scary. There's lots of scary bits, you know, ghosts and that. And then they sort of finally get up to... to heaven, and it's not real. They just get kicked right down again, and that's it. There's no heaven. There is no heaven. Oh, it's all a lie.
That's the real horror.
It's just
no happy afterlife for everyone.
Yeah. That's right. The beauty of the horror film. You don't have a distinctive ending. You can just do whatever.
Belinda Carlisle at the end. Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth?
Heaven was the earth you were given.
Yeah.
You squandered it.
You should have made more effort on your current life rather than focusing on your afterlife.
Idiots.
That's how the film ends.
Yeah.
No comment on religion.
With that version of the song.
Robert Downey Jr., who's Satan, turning to the camera and saying, "You should have worked harder in your current life rather than looking for the afterlife, you idiots." And then flames, and then that's the end.
Dwatg, Don't Worry About the Government podcast, the butler won't walk in this room.
The what?
The butler won't walk in this room.
The butler won't walk in this room.
Yeah.
Oh no. Well, so this is the spooky door.
So, Dev Patel has been hired as a butler in this old house.
Right.
And there's this, like... it's a spooky door.
There's a door.
He's been hired by Maggie Smith and Judy Dench, who have this old, like, mansion-y kind of house, and these two old ladies pottering about.
One of them's got a brother who, like, lives in the attic and is really cranky, and they're there to look after him. The butler's there to look after them.
Yeah.
I guess, like, at some point you're going to come across, like, an old sign in the old part of the house that nobody's been to for ages, and it's an old-style sign that nobody's touched in ages. It just says, "The butler won't walk in this room."
It's with dust just...
And
who's been? I think we need, like, sort of an audience character. Who is?
Dev Patel. He's a new hire.
Oh, he's the new butler, right?
There, like, "Hi, I've come to take this job on." He's just fresh out of butler school.
Yeah, butler
fresh
school.
Fresh-faced.
Relatable.
Yeah.
I've got it. Like, he walks past that room. The butler is not allowed in this room.
Yeah.
He hasn't asked anyone about it. To be honest, that's the thing that was the assumption I would come to if I saw a sign that says the butler won't walk in this room, is that the butler's not allowed in this room.
And he just hears screams and angry cries and the occasional, "Ooh, wah, wah."
It's like that bit in The Haunting. The sort of, like, you get those all those bits in The Haunting where all the foreshadowing is done just through looking at items, and then there just being screams near them.
Yeah, and he occasionally walks past it and just hears this thumping, stuff being thrown around, and he's like, "God, I wonder what's going on in there."
You get sort of progressively more and more curious.
And then one day he's walking past and hears nothing except a faint waka 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 waka. Yeah, and he, like, there's a close up of
"The butler won't walk in this room."
Jesus. I didn't think of that. The twist to this
God.
Right,
this is where my head was going.
Reaching for the doorknob, and then he's like, No, I won't go in there. Judy Dench and, was it Maggie Smith?
Yeah.
Sort of see him So Judi Dench and Maggie Smith see him reach for the doorknob, and they're just sort of watching, like, heads poked around the corner of the corridor, just like, is he gonna do it?
Is he right?
Is he? And then, like, the next day, he's tossing and turning in his bed, just like, what is behind that? Like, I think it's just the curiosity thing, really, at this point. It's like
seeing it in his dreams.
He
like,
has
his dream, like Lovecraft, his dreams are full of that door.
Yeah, that door and the waka 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 waka. That mysterious noise.
And there's a montage where it all, a dream montage where it all swirls and comes to a head, and it's the sign is right up in the frame, and you hear waka waka just louder and louder with all these voices reverberating around.
He's like running around like he's running around the mansion, but it's a maze, and he can't get out of the mansion.
You can hear an old man's voice. Says,
is that door?
Yeah, yeah.
Every door becomes that door.
Every door becomes that door.
An old man's voice saying, "What are you doing down here?"
Yeah, and like ghosts appear from nowhere, and he gets up and he's like, right, I'm gonna fucking open that door, because this is just weird at this point. That's dialogue from the film. And yeah, like, you see Judi Dench and Maggie Smith peeking around the corner again, like, he's gonna do it. He's gonna open the door. Oh my god. Opens the door, right? There's this old man, Derek Jacobi. He's.
From New Tricks, I think.
What?
No.
I thought that was Dennis Waterman.
Old man actor.
Derek Jacobi, old man actor. It could be Jim Broadbent.
All right.
For any
it is Jim Broadbent.
It is Jim Broadbent.
It's Jim Broadbent.
It's Jim Broadbent. He's on an old Pac-Man arcade.
Right.
And his hands are, like, withered and glued to it. Because he has to beat Maggie Smith and Judi Dench's high scores. They've locked him. He was the old butler. And he's like, you have come to take the chalice from me. And Dev Patel's like, what the hell is going on? Judi Dench, Maggie Smith stood behind him. You must do it now. Get on the arcade.
I don't get it.
Derek Jacobi, or Jim Broadbent, sorry, sprints out of the room.
His hands all gnarled.
He's got a giant beard. His hands like ripped claws because they're on, like, they've been on a joystick for centuries. And he's sort of like, as he runs away, and then Dev Patel touches the joystick, film ends.
What?
What?
I don't get it.
I mean,
I don't get why that was called the butler walk in this room.
Well, he wasn't walking, was he? He sat down at another stool?
Yeah, he was.
I thought it was going to be a racism thing.
No,
I was gonna. I thought it was going to be if he goes in that room, his legs start to sort of do a body horror, nasty, twisty contort.
Yeah, he becomes.
Thing.
I was going to do a similar thing where like his he becomes like a part snake, and like he's just suddenly, oh, you know those weebles. The wobbly the guys from Noddy.
They don't fall there.
Yeah, who like the toys that you like. Push
yeah,
over
yeah, yeah.
and then they rock back up again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he goes in there and then suddenly he's just like
he becomes one of those.
Or no, over the next he opens the door and then there's nothing in the room. It's just an old room. It's an old toy room. It's a playroom for children. And there's one of those sat on the with an arcade if you want. But there's an old one of those weebles like rocking backwards and forwards in the middle of the room. And he's like, huh. That's weird. So he closes the door, goes back upstairs, starts having these dreams again and again and again. Him opening the door happens at the start of the film. And then
exactly the same film.
No, it isn't. Because this has foreshadowing. Yours was just random, like, oh, I opened the door. And now it's Pac-Man forever.
I I'm down
it's
for
the,
it.
It's the twist.
Definitely not.
Is that the sequel to Pac-Man?
We need to talk about the definition of twist on this show.
It's just something random that happens.
Because my one had an arc where he's like, he discovers the thing early, then he goes back and he starts losing his legs.
No, just Jim Broadbent playing Pac-Man.
Yeah, just suddenly.
Yeah, because, all right. Because Maggie Smith and Judi Dench, right, have got him locked up playing Pac-Man.
Why?
Funsies.
Just for, like, no one will see it coming.
You know what, fine, let's go on the next one.
No one saw it coming.
All right.
From CyberConnor, we've got, how much is Dwatig paying you to choose his or his slash her slash their pitches? I don't think we've chosen Dwatig's titles for a while.
I think the first thing is, right, it's a really easy name to say, or a fun name to say, Dwatig.
Don't worry about the government podcast.
Secondly,
it's 10 quid right there.
Ching. On the front. Secondly, you bet you remember it more because it's a fun word to say. And thirdly, I don't know, they just give us a lot of them. Yeah, every week on the ball.
Up on Joe Hegarty. He's on every week. All of his get-ons, isn't
they?
Yeah, well, no one's picked up on that.
It's Joe or Tom Ocker and Hegarty, the two brothers.
Oh, no.
They interchange. The brothers Hegarty. Get, one of them gets one in pretty much every week.
Not for a while. I haven't seen Tom's ones for ages.
Yeah, one the week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I'm the one reading them out, and I have no idea. I do these podcasts drugged. I don't remember any. When it comes to editing, I'm like, that's new. I don't remember that.
But the true and honest answer is, right, we have a place that people can pay us to do things.
What's that called, Matt?
It's called patreon.com/lifesofpitchpodcast. And, Dwatig's not part of that.
Yeah.
Just keep sending us. I think we've got a thing where we'll pretty much never take money for a pitch.
Yeah, well, like, this leads me on to Ross Originals' questions.
Yeah.
Number one, what is your general pitch picking criteria? Sometimes I'm surprised by your choices.
Shade being thrown at Tom here, who does the choosing.
Yeah, I do the choosing, and basically before every episode, I sometimes it's very chaotic, sort of, I sometimes ask, if I can't think of one, if I can't look at one that's immediately pops out to me, I just say, can we go, do you want to go with something that is either vague or specific? And the vague ones are something like, I think it just got any sort of words mushed together.
Yeah, yeah.
That don't really say anything. A specific one has someone's name in it, or is about someone, or about a place.
Yeah. So you've got things like sandwich or jambon is a vague one.
Vague one.
Whereas
my wife is a literal giant snake
is quite literally a very specific.
Yeah. That leads me on to his next question. Choose your monster bride.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. I think, right, Tom, let us try and remember all of the monster brides we've done.
I think there's just two. I think there's Spider Wife and my wife is a little giant snake.
Oh, we've done one before. We did one before, I'm sure of it.
Oh, Chris Pratt was married to
the
alien
from Aliens.
In Stinky Rentals episode 19.
Yep, literally the most said words in this podcast.
Stinky Rentals
episode 19.
Tom's gonna have it with gravestone.
Just the URL.
It lies. Tom McGrath, not that one. Stinky Rentals episode 19.
Whenever you walk past it, it's going to trigger motion sensor that plays that whole episode.
here's what his mega mind came up with.
And you just, that's it trailing off as you walk away. But yeah, choose your monster wife. So you can also go with any monster wives that you can think of from fiction.
Okay.
But the ones that we've provided are as Xenomorph, your wife is a literal giant snake, or spider wife.
Or you can make up a new one.
I know what I want the dragon from Shrek.
Okay, good monster wife.
My choice.
Good monster wife.
My choice.
Can I pick John Waters? Because he's looking at me like, in fact, just looking at you, Tom.
He only has eyes for me.
Definitely.
He's looking at me like he wants to kill me with those dentures.
He definitely looks like a monster.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that's question time. Oh, wait, no, I haven't answered.
Yeah, who'd you pick?
I don't know. The one that won't eat me at the end of the film.
that's not going to happen. Monster wife?
Can I go with, like, Morticia Adams?
She's not a monster.
I mean, she's kind of a monster. She's based on a character from the Munsters.
Fair enough. I'd
have to duel Gomez to the death, but you know.
You'd lose, mate.
You would lose. He's handy with a rapier.
Yeah, that, and he's got passion behind him as well.
Oh. Smoldering.
My monster wife. Oh, I had one, and then I lost it.
Is it her off of Bedazzled? The Devil.
That is a good call. Satan from Bedazzled. I'm thinking Natalie Portman midway through Transfiguration in Black Swan. It's my monster bride.
All I know about that film is it's got a long neck in it.
Yeah, her neck elongates and her legs become swan-like and bend backwards.
Perfect.
Sexy.
Yeah, so that's our monster wives chosen.
Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Lives of Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.